Good morning, Connecticut. To our friends across the sound, it's John Vocat, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning in to the award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. This morning, we're going to run, bike, and swim our way into the hearts of music lovers, welcoming back representatives of the CMAK Sandy Hook Memorial Foundation, which was established to honor six-year-old triathlete Chase Kowalski, who was lost at Sandy Hook Elementary School. Besides hearing about all the exciting triathlon activities and other events coming up, we'll be inviting music lovers to hear Carter Bray and members of the New York Philharmonic as they present Chasing the Music, a very special concert at the Waterbury Palace Theater this June. Then we'll check in with the new executive director of the Connecticut Port Authority to let all the landlocked communities across the state know how this agency is going to be providing economic advantages to all. And we'll remind all of the state's coastal communities about a new grant program delivering more than $7 million to strengthen the economic potential of harbors and marinas along Connecticut's coastline. Then we'll close with Ginger and Larry Katz and the Courage to Speak Foundation. Connoisseur Media is proud to sponsor the 13th annual Empowering Youth to be Drug-Free Family Night. And we're inviting everyone across Connecticut to learn how to keep their children safe from the temptations of drugs and alcohol at this free event coming up Monday, March 13th at West Rocks Middle School in Norwalk. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vocat, right after this invitation. Attention families, come on out and meet the Connecticut Experiential Learning Center Middle School team at their activity day and open house on March 12th from 1 to 3 at 28 School Street in Brantford. You can join the CELC team to find out more about an experience-based middle school education and meet Brushy Hill Nature Center staff and learn about summer programs and homeschool programs for the 2017-18 school year. And you'll meet the teachers and students and participate in hands-on activities like cordage making, music, and art, and enjoy some refreshments. If you'd like to find out more, you can call 203-433-4658 or go to ctexperiential.org. Well, we're going to open the program this morning revisiting a good friend of the program. Rebecca Kowalski is with us. If you recognize the name, she was able to join us last year to talk about the CMAK Sandy Hook Memorial Foundation and the Race for Chase program. Rebecca tragically lost her son Chase in the 12-14 incident at Sandy Hook Elementary School. And out of that tragedy grew the Race for Chase Kids Triathlon program, happily affiliated initially with my hometown YMCA, where I grew up and learned how to swim and enjoyed a great range of activities as a young child at that Waterbury Y. But now in 2017, the Race for Chase Kids Triathlon program is going to serve over 650 youths in three states at 20 different YMCA sites. And they also have another very exciting program, which is coming up at the Waterbury Palace Theater in June, called Chasing the Music. And it is going to feature Carter Bray, principal cellist at the New York Philharmonic, who has generously offered a benefit symphony. And we're going to talk all about that with Carter's wife, Ilaria Bray, who is with us on the line. And Rebecca Kowalski is also joining us. Kevin Grimes is also sitting by for technical support and informational support if needed. So welcome to all of you. Rebecca, thanks for coming back and keeping us up to date on these incredible advancements with the Race for Chase program. How's everything been going?
It's really great. Thanks for having us on today.
So you have had some, since we last spoke, you've been running around quite literally and stand very busy.
Absolutely. We've got a lot of great fundraising events coming up in this new year, and then I'm also trying to keep myself on track, being a triathlete myself now.
So tell us a little bit, for folks who may not be familiar, and remind us about your transition into running yourself and how the Race for Chase program has really gotten so much incredible traction over the past few years.
Well, we always share with everybody that Chase, at the age of six, was a winning triathlete, and we wanted to honor his spirit, and that's how we became, that's how we put the program together to honor Chase's spirit with the Waterbury YMCA, and then we've grown that program, and in doing so, at one of our community triathlons that we do in July, I was called out, and a friend of mine said, you know, you're asking these kids to be a triathlete, and you're not one. And I was like, I think I hate you, but you're totally right. So it was from that moment that I decided that I needed to channel my grief into a positive way for myself. And I took a year to start training, and I started out with kickboxing and walking, and I am now running, not overly happily, but running and enjoying swimming and biking immensely.
And since you made the commitment to be involved on the front lines yourself, how many triathlons have you been able to participate in?
I have completed myself five triathlons, the last one being an Iron Girl triathlon, which is a sprint triathlon. But for me, it was one of the highlights of my year last year. I also competed in a adventure triathlon, which had kayaking instead of swimming, and that was an amazing feat in itself also. I was joined with my friend Kevin Grimes and Suzanne Navis and a couple other people, and it's, you know what, it's totally changed my life.
And you have been by no means sticking close to home. You've been doing some traveling to do these races.
The Iron Girl was in New Jersey, and you know, we're all trying to, you know, try different things and be positive role models for these kids and know that, you know what, we can do anything that we put our minds to. And traveling to, Kevin just got back from doing a marathon where he qualified for Boston Marathon for next year. And, you know, everybody involved in the foundation has found a passion for the sport of triathlon, and it's really great.
Mm. Well, I guess second only to young people, even as young as 5 and 6 years old, who can look to their peers for inspiration. Certainly when they see adults and their parents doing it, adults who they know, the multi-generational energy and effect certainly helps get started.
Oh, absolutely. And what I've learned through some other families that are in the program, you can do a relay with your family. So you can have the mom swim, the dad bike, and the kid run, or the kid swim, the mom bike, and the dad run. And it's just, the possibilities are really endless, and it's not just a one-person sport. If you find something that you can do a relay, you can do it with your family, and that's really empowering, and it really brings families together.
And I guess while every single person involved in the Race for Chase initiative, no matter what age they are or in what capacity they're involved, they're all incredibly special people. But I did want to take a couple of moments to just recognize Aaron Flanagan, who has a very, very special mission in her heart. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Aaron Flanagan is actually running a marathon in every state for Chase. And she is up to, I believe she completed Phoenix, and that was her 18th marathon.
Hmm. And talk about inspirational. I mean, that's really an incredible thing.
Oh, absolutely. Erin had, you know, issues in her own life, and running really seemed to help that. It gave her clarity, and she really enjoys it. And then finding another hardcore reason, you know, learning about Chase and what he did, and then our loss of him, it just really resonated with her, and she wanted to do something to just honor his spirit, and she decided that she would do a marathon in every state for him. And her mother has been by her side, backing her, and you know, financially helping her to achieve that goal.
Excellent. Well, we're going to break away from running and turn our attention to music for a few minutes, and then we're going to come back and talk to you a little bit more, Rebecca Kowalski, about telling moms and dads and young people that may be listening to the program how they can get involved in the triathlon portion of the initiative. But as you indicated, Rebecca, there are all kinds of ways to help benefit the CMAK, Sandy Hook Memorial Foundation, in memory of Chase. And one of them is to enjoy some incredible music. And as we said at the top of the show, Ilaria Bray is with us. She is the wife of Carter Bray, who is the principal cellist at the New York Philharmonic. Ilaria, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about this concert that's going to be coming up on Sunday, June 4th at the Waterbury Palace Theater. It's called Chasing the Music.
Chasing the Music, yes. It's an idea. The idea goes back to several years. Carter wanted to do something for the foundation, to help the foundation. The program is going to be the Carnival of the Animals in the first half, and that's a wonderful piece of music, like lively and joyful and very suited to young audiences. Different musicians give voice to different animals. So that'll be the first half, and then the second half, Carter and some of his colleagues will play some music for the audience. So the idea is to involve. It's pretty much in keeping with the foundation and bringing families together around a program that is both interesting and will be fun. We hope it will be fun for both children and their families and their parents and grandparents.
And Carter and his colleagues are not only making the incredible music accessible to audiences of all ages in the Carnival of Animals and their other selections, but they will also have an opportunity to meet a number of the people who are coming to support the cause.
Oh, absolutely, yes. After the concert, there will be a reception where, the Carter and his friends, musicians, will meet and chat and talk to the guests of the concert.
Is there any indication about the number of musicians? Is it going to be a quartet? What is the size of the ensemble you expect Carter will be bringing in?
It'll be two pianists and then several other musicians, a cello, viola, flute. So it'll be interesting also for the children to be exposed to so many different instruments and their voices.
That's wonderful. So how did you and Carter learn about and become familiar with the Kowalski family?
Well, this goes back really to the immediate aftermath of the incident at the Sandy Hook School. Carter and I, like I guess many, many other around the country, were stunned and so aggrieved by what had happened. And I just happened to read an interview with Rebecca where she was talking about her decision to start a foundation to honor her son. And I was struck by her desire to step away from that darkness and do something positive to celebrate and honor the life of Chase. Mm. So instinctively, we just, I think we sent a message via Facebook saying, could we help? Could Carter Bray, who's my husband, play a concert to help the foundation? That's how we met. And it was a first for us. We had never organized a fundraiser. It's taken a while, but in the meantime, the good news about that is that we are doing it, and we became friends, close friends, with Rebecca and Stephen and their children. And it's been a wonderful experience for us these 4 years.
Yeah. That's absolutely. Great. We've spent a lot of time together. The idea of the concert was, you know, for a while in planning, but we just kind of kept our cultivating our relationship and our friendship, and in doing that, we were able to really bring the concert to fruition.
Excellent. So, Rebecca, while we have you, give folks some idea of where you hope to put the proceeds for the event.
All of the proceeds will go right back into the foundation so we can promote more programs throughout the years.
Excellent. So, folks, if you're interested in getting on board early, perhaps you have a company and you'd like to be a sponsor of the event, or if you'd like to buy tickets or sponsor youth tickets, you can go to chasingthemusic.org. Or contact the Waterbury Palace Theater box office online or in person on East Main Street in Waterbury, Connecticut. Once again, the event is called Chasing the Music, and it is at the Waterbury Palace coming up in June. And this event will be to benefit the CMAK, Sandy Hook Memorial Foundation, and the Race for Chase initiative. So in the last minute or so that we have, Rebecca, aside from this event, how about for the folks that are ready to get their sneakers on the ground and get their tails in the water and their butts on the bike? What's coming up in the next few weeks or months to ramp up the 2017 season for the kids' triathlon program?
Well, we will be at the Sandy Hook Run for the Run for Families on April 1st, and then we'll be hosting our kids triathlon, community triathlon, on July 9th at Great Hollow Lake in Monroe. Kids will be able to register, I believe, on Mother's Day, and that I think we'll have about 250 openings for children from 5-6 years old to 12 years old.
Okay, great. And tell folks some of the other ways that they might be able to get involved in supporting the foundation and this Race for Chase initiative.
Absolutely. So you can go to our website, cmacfoundation.org. So it's CMAK. And that stands for Chase's full name, Chase Michael Anthony Kowalski. So cmacfoundation.org. Check out our website, and there's plenty of opportunities. We're always looking for volunteers for many of our events. This year we'll be having 3 finale program triathlons, so we'll need lots of volunteers in Newport, in Connecticut, in Southington. And then if anybody wants to ride down to South Carolina, we could always use help down there. We're also, we have a motorcycle event in May, on May 20th, out of Oxford, and we'll also have the Family Scavenger Hunt, which is another really fun event we do in September. So we've got a whole calendar full of great events. If you go to the website and just check it out, see what you'd like to get involved with, and I can guarantee you, when you see a triathlon put on by our foundation and you watch those kids cross that finish line, it will change your life forever.
Great. And I know based on the incredible talents of Carter Bray himself, never mind the 10 other esteemed musicians he'll be bringing with him for Chasing the Music on Sunday, June 4th at the Waterbury Palace Theater. That is also going to be quite an inspiring event, including a full rendition of Carnival of Animals. So a spectacular program for kids of all ages, families, and individuals, lovers of great music, while collaterally bringing more benefit to the CMAK Foundation and this incredible Race for Chase initiative, which is now spreading across the country and bringing hundreds and hundreds of more young people and the ones they love into the world that Chase so dearly loved, getting into doing triathlons. So we want to thank you guys for being part of the program. Ilaria Bray is with us, a wife of Carter Bray, who will be leading the Philharmonic musicians for this Chasing the Music event. And of course, Rebecca Kowalski. Thank you so much. Kevin Grimes also on the line with us. Great work you're doing as well, Kevin. And thank you all for what you do. And we'll see you at the Palace Theater in June for Chasing the Music. Thanks for being a part of the program. Well, about 8 or 10 months ago, we made our first visit with representatives from the Connecticut Port Authority. And now that the official agency has been launched, we're pleased to be on the line with Evan Matthews. He's executive director of the Connecticut Port Authority, which, for the short intro, is a quasi-public agency responsible for marketing and coordinating the development of the state's maritime economy. And if you'd like to learn more about it, you can go to portsct.com. That's their website. But beyond that, we've got lots to talk about over the next few minutes with Evan Matthews. Evan, thanks for joining us on the line.
John, thanks for having me today. It's a pleasure.
So as we corresponded a little bit before we picked up on the microphones this morning, you know, I've got a great interest in economic development as one of the key points of what we try to focus on here on the award-winning For the People. And we are so pleased to make the acquaintance and kind of get in on the ground floor as the Port Authority initiative in Connecticut was ramping up last year. Now things are fully in place. Can you just give us a kind of a 2 or 3 minute little historical synopsis of how this all started and where you find yourself today?
Sure. We are, as I mentioned, we began operations this year on July 1st, and I was hired in September. And so we've been doing a lot of capacity building, getting certain programs together, board, developing the board. And so we're in a position now where we are happy to announce two programs. One's focused on the Port of New London, where we're going to be doing some capital projects down to improve the State Pier facility and make that more accommodating for the existing steel business. We're also focusing on small harbors, and so we just announced our small harbor improvement projects program, or what we call SHIP with two P's. And that's designed to help municipalities and public entities like harbor commissions with small capital projects around the state. So one of the things that's unique about the Connecticut Port Authority is that it truly is a coastwise organization. And we are working in the deep water ports of Bridgeport, New London, and New Haven, as well as all of the waterfront and coastal communities on waterfront economic development projects.
Well, one of the reasons why, as I explained to you in scheduling, to bring you onto the program and keep you coming back is to continue to be able to remind people who don't live across the southern span of Connecticut along the shoreline why the Connecticut Port Authority is so economically critical, whether you're in Meriden or Waterbury or Enfield or Lakeville, for that matter. Can you kind of give us a little little bit of an idea of how the work that the Connecticut Port Authority is already doing and will expand to continue to do is going to make a critical economic difference to virtually all of Connecticut's 169 towns, obviously including about the 135 or 38 of them that are not on the coast?
Sure, that's a great question, and I'm glad you asked. The part of what the cargo ports represent are nodes or gateways for cargo, and so we are also working with our supply chain partners beyond the ports, so that we are looking at the rail providers, highway connections, intermodal facilities, warehouses, anything that improves the efficiency of cargo movements in and out of Connecticut. And we're looking at investments and partnerships and strategies where we are ultimately trying to reduce the cost of shipping products in and out of Connecticut. And so it is truly, as you mentioned, it is the Port Authority, but we are looking all across the state wherever we can add value and make our transportation system more efficient. We are looking at least one intermodal facility where containers would be coming in and out of a rail facility, which would greatly reduce the trucking, taking trucks off the road. A lot of the cargo that comes in and out of Connecticut has to come from either Boston or the terminals in New Jersey. And so having that intermodal facility reduces the time that Connecticut companies have to truck their cargo before it becomes part of the transportation system. Mm. So that's also something that we're looking at. As I mentioned, the railroads, both the New England Central and the Providence and Worcester Railroads, are key partners, as well as Pan Am Southern and the Connecticut Southern. So we're looking at all of those possibilities. We also look at DOT for partnerships, where we're working with them to try to improve freight mobility. And so that's kind of, the complete picture of really looking at our ports as part of the transportation system.
What about linkage between the major ports along the southern tier of Connecticut and many of the accessible communities that are located on one or the other banks of the major rivers that extend northward from the coastline, from down in the Saugatuck in Fairfield County all the way to the Thames and Connecticut rivers?
You mean in terms of waterborne transportation for people?
Yes. Is there a role to play or advantages for the Port Authority to explore in playing a role? And I'm going to tie this into, after the break, the SHIPP initiative, because my question would be whether or not those improvements are exclusive to shoreline communities or communities that are along the lower portions of accessible waterways going up into Connecticut also eligible.
Sure. We will look at, and we have looked at, ferry projects. That is something that's in our, our purview. Obviously, we're in talks looking to work with both Cross Sound Ferry and the Bridgeport Port Jefferson Ferry on infrastructure. Those are things that we can focus on. And I know that there's been a couple ideas floated around, people looking at ways to connect southwestern Connecticut with New York City via water. Mm. So those are things that we could do. But yeah, there's no prescribed limitation on where we can work. So if there is a project on a river, a ship could be used. I mean, we do have some ranking criteria that we're looking at to evaluate the projects. But, we really are looking at ways in which our investments will really drive economic development and create jobs with a maritime or a waterfront focus.
Excellent. Well, we're going to come back and talk more about that. And if you are in a community that is particularly along the coast and you think you might have an idea about exploring some way of making some improvements there to enhance economic development, we're going to tell you about how to apply and get a piece of the $7.5 million in the Small Harbor Improvement Projects Program with Evan Matthews, Executive Director of the Connecticut Port Authority. We just need to take a quick break. Evan and everyone, stick with us, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. And if you work or volunteer with a state nonprofit, visit the site to apply for one of our 2017 Love CT Foundation grants. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Boquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this reminder. It's coming up next Saturday, March 11th. That's right, the 29th annual Bowl to Benefit. BH Care and the Umbrella Center for Domestic Violence Services. There'll be five bowling sessions happening from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. at AMF Lanes in Milford. Please come out and join one of the largest events of its kind in the state. The event unites over 1,200 concerned citizens, businesses, school organizations, and community leaders in the fight against domestic violence. If you'd like to find out more or register your team, you can call 203-736-2601 or just go to bhcare.org and click on the events tab to get you or your team registered. They'll be happy to take singles or entire teams, and there's still a few slots left. So bowl a strike against domestic violence at the 29th annual Bowl to Benefit, Saturday, March 11th at AMF Lanes in Milford. All right, we're back. We've got about 4 or 5 minutes left with Evan Matthews. He's Executive Director of the Connecticut Port Authority, as we were mentioning before the break. There is an April 17th deadline for the Small Harbor Improvement Projects Program, which is going to draw from a $7.5 million pot to distribute across communities who are successful applicants. So, Evan, in the last few minutes that we have, if we could expand on the information that community leaders and residents need to know about the SHIP program, will hopefully drive a few applications your way.
Great, thanks. Yeah, I think that the Connecticut Port Authority Board has envisioned the SHIP program as a key component, a central part of its mission, which is to invest in small harbors throughout Connecticut. This is not a one-time program. This is going to be an annual request for applications. So that this year the target is $7.5 million, but obviously, that could change in the future with more appropriations and bond funding. The other thing is that we envision, because we're trying to create a pipeline of investment, that if a community is thinking about a project, the first year they could apply for the design, the second year they could do a feasibility study. So this is something that communities can go and it's really designed to provide gap financing for projects that are really going to create economic development, economic activity, job growth in waterfront communities.
So for smaller projects like the ones being funded for those who qualify for this SHIP initiative, can you give us some sort of an idea of the kind of project that the grant may underwrite that would create some economic advantages in the community where the project is completed?
Sure. We've been talking to communities just preliminarily about boat ramps or bulkhead replacements, breakwaters, dredging, anything that drainage, things that are taking place along a waterfront that require, you know, that type of involvement with the Port Authority.
Very good. And what else is on the radar for you and the Port Authority, Evan, in the coming months and years as this brand new
organization? Sure. I think the two, aside from the small harbors in terms of focusing on the maritime sector, the biggest project that we're working on is the New Haven Harbor Deepening Study. We're working with the Army Corps of Engineers and the New Haven Port Authority to design, to look at the feasibility of deepening that channel. Currently, it's authorized for 35 feet, and so the Army Corps is doing a detailed analysis, working with the terminal operators and the maritime community there to see if they can get a deeper authorization, which would take the channel down closer to 40 feet. We're hoping maybe even beyond 40 feet. And that really creates efficiencies with the bigger ships so that they can load more cargo, bring more cargo into Connecticut on one ship. And so that's really, really important.
Oh, great. Well, Evan, I really appreciate touching base because you were able to really kind of fill in a lot of blanks in terms of how quickly the Connecticut Port Authority has hit the ground running since its official inception, and you're coming on board as exec really just a few months ago. Once again, we want to remind folks that April 17th is the deadline to get a piece of the $7.5 million pot with the Small Harbor Improvement Projects Program. To learn about that and all the great work being done by the Connecticut Port Authority, check their website, portsct.com. The Port Authority is a quasi-public agency responsible for marketing and coordinating the development of the state's maritime economy to benefit not just Connecticut's coastal communities, but all 169 towns and cities here in our state. And we will continue to visit with and promote the Connecticut Port Authority. And Evan, I look forward to talking with you again soon. Thanks for visiting. Well, right about this time, every year we get an opportunity to sit down with Ginger and Larry Katz. They are, of course, two of Connecticut's real gems. Ginger is the founder of the Courage to Speak Foundation and celebrating their 21st year and their mission to save lives. Their 13th annual Courage to Speak Empowering Youth to be Drug-Free Family Night is so important that they have been a partner with Connoisseur Media for a number of years, and we want to make sure everyone in the entire state of Connecticut, as well as all of our listeners over there in Long Island and over in New York, Metro New York, Westchester, and those pockets of Rhode Island and Massachusetts that are listening on the air and folks tuning in online from all over are aware of this event and the great work that the Courage to Speak Foundation is doing. That event is coming up on Monday, March 13th, again at the West Rocks Middle School in Norwalk. And they certainly, with the remaining tickets, would welcome anyone or everyone who would like to come and learn more about helping to keep their kids drug-free. And the great leadership that they're developing among young people here, particularly in Fairfield County and beyond. By no means is Ginger Katz or Larry a fixture in Fairfield County. Now they are known globally for their great work over these past 21 years. But of course, it was all inspired out of tragedy related to drugs. So, Ginger, for the folks who may not know you or know of your work, can you just remind us about Ian?
Sure. My son Ian was a college student attending the University of Hartford, and he called up crying, begging for help, addicted to an opioid, heroin, and he couldn't stop. And we brought him home, and he got help, and he was working on his recovery for 3.5 months. And one night he came to us and said he wanted to see the doctor in the morning, and he told us that he relapsed. And he spoke to me at 1:30. I love you, Mom. We're going to take care of this in the morning. And never did I think he'd go downstairs and do it one more time. Mm-hmm. At 4 o'clock in the morning, his dog Sonny tried to wake me up. Sonny slept with Ian and climbed 4 flights of stairs to send me the message. But I was so at ease because Ian's words rocked me to sleep that night. It was the first good night's sleep I had in months, suffering along with Ian because he was addicted to drugs. The whole family suffers. It's a family disease. And I was in a very deep sleep, and I just pushed Sonny away just thinking he had to go out. And he was trying to tell me that Ian had gone downstairs and did it one more time. So I got up for my morning run at 6 a.m., and that's when I found Ian. He didn't have a second chance, and he died. And my cries for help were heard 2 blocks away.
Mm. Well, like so many parents and loved ones who tragically lose someone so close, and someone with so much promise, and the promise of an attempt to get clean, that Ian made. Know your pain, but there are millions of parents, hundreds of thousands here in Connecticut alone, who I know it's your mission to ensure never go through that, and that is the impetus for this whole project, which has really become yours and Larry's life journey. And as you roll along through the years after we lost Ian, you have made so many contacts, so many impressions, and so many friends. And what's most exciting, as we've been corresponding, coming up to the 13th annual Courage to Speak, Empowering Youth to be Drug-Free Family Night, is a recent trip you made to Washington, because your associations are not only among clinicians and parents and educators, but also law enforcement.
Yes. In fact, we had 2 presentations, one at the Anti-Drug Coalitions of America, where all the prevention people across the country meet. But then the very same day, I was invited at night to the New Narcotics Association National Conference. And that's they all join together and get training, and these are the guys that have their boots on the ground, and they really know what's going on as far as drug trafficking is concerned, and it is an enormous problem. Every one of our children are going to be exposed to this, and this is why it's so key to educate them as early as possible. But this conference really enlightened us as well. Because we don't always get that kind of training from the police officers, where it's trafficked from and where it's distributed. And it's incredible what's going on. And if any parent would have listened to this, they would have just gone home, hugged their kids, and got a hold of any kind of drug prevention materials and start working with them.
Mm. Larry, what were a couple of the things that impressed you in terms of either what the officers and law enforcement professionals were presenting in the conferences or in the spaces that you attended, or perhaps more anecdotally as they were kind of talking to you one-on-one?
I think the thing that I was most alerted to was the fact that the fentanyl, which is a very powerful stimulant, and about 50 times the strength of heroin, and is now being used along with the heroin, or used by itself as mistakenly people take it, and it could cause death on the first time of use. And he gave a scenario of his one of the police officers gave his a scenario of his brother's son, who never did any drugs at all through high school, and then he decided to try marijuana in his sophomore year of college. And one of the his friends said, in order to get a real good high, why don't you put this fentanyl patch on your arm? And he passed away from the fentanyl patch on his arm. So that's how potent this drug is, and they have to be concerned about going in, and when they do a raid, is their own well-being itself, because they're exposed to this chemical.
I want to say Wethersfield, Connecticut, or there was a Connecticut police department just this week where an officer at a traffic stop ended up having to be hospitalized because of his exposure to just the air within the vehicle that the drugs were in.
It was
the fentanyl.
Also, this particular law enforcement person tracked the cartel delivery system, and it came from below California,
Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Mexico to Chicago. There was a distribution there, but then there was also went from Chicago to New Jersey. And from New Jersey, it gets delivered to the New England states and Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And there are kilos on, many, many kilos on every truck. And the truckers are clean. They don't have a record at all. They're squeaky clean. And they're probably, you know, making at least $1,500 a kilo. And sometimes there are 10 kilos in a truck. So that whole delivery system, they make $15,000 easily.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the drugs come from. They're just distributed from New Jersey up to the New England states. And it was just an eye-opener, and he gave the amount of money each cartel makes with every drop. And,
sure.
and we don't hear this at all.
Yeah,
the average person doesn't. It's such a business.
Right.
And the trucks are not being stopped on the roads, but remember when we had 9/11?
Sure.
How they opened up all the trucks going into New York?
Mm-hmm.
They found kilos of drugs going into New York, which they didn't expect. They were looking for bombs and other mm-hmm. things, but yeah. not drugs, and they're being shipped all over the country,
right?
And they're coming to our families,
right?
And killing people.
Yeah. And who's to say what's coming around in the thousands of smaller vehicles, not even the big
sure.
commercial trucks?
Sure.
So, certainly a huge challenge, and great that you were able to kind of get exposed to yet another kind of chapter in the big book of the battle you're fighting.
Yeah, because we really, in the beginning, we did some advocacy, which we do. We always visit the state capital of Connecticut as well as nationally and get to know our partners in our representatives, because they can help move bills along and change the laws and make our families safer. What I really focused in on was when I would tell Ian's story, I would realize that the children, it was almost the first time they ever heard my presentation. And it was like so embraced. And I knew it was so important to educate children. So not only did we present to the children, but we developed curriculum at the elementary level, middle school, high school. And we also have parenting courses called Courageous Parenting 101. These are toolkits for every child. And these programs are taught by facilitators and teachers in the school, and we have over 350 teachers teaching our programs across the country. And that'll bring us to the family night, because this is the end result of them hearing my presentation, reading Sonny's story, which is Ian's story, based on the family beagle. The beagle tells the story in a form of a book, and then they take an 8-lesson to 15-lesson curriculum, and these children will present their vow not to use drugs after hearing the presentation and reading the book and the teachers teaching these curriculum. So they're getting very well schooled, particularly in the Norwalk where we started. But we're in so many states across the country curriculum.
Yeah, I wanted to say, Wisconsin, Washington, D.C., Virginia, Vermont, Texas, Rhode Island, Pennsylvania, Ohio, North Carolina, Nevada, New York, New Jersey, New Hampshire, Michigan, Massachusetts, Maryland, Maine, Iowa, Indiana, Illinois, Florida, Connecticut, of course, and California. And many of these states are representing this program in multiple schools, dozens in Connecticut, New York, and more than a dozen in Massachusetts, and growing every day. Will you have any representatives from outside of Connecticut expected to
attend?
We
always have people from other states, particularly Massachusetts. I do a lot of presenting in Massachusetts, and we just got back from Rhode Island at St. George's School. Mm. We go everywhere. I mean, you know, as long as they want us, and we go.
Excellent. Great. Yeah. So tell us more about the, in 13 years, just with this event, your story and the important impression that you need to make on young people has been passed to hundreds and hundreds of parents.
Just
and
Norwalk
students.
Alone, there are about 19,000 students that have taken our programs, and that's the book, the presentation, as well as the curriculum taught by the health class teachers. So, but it starts off, the program that night, the event that night starts off with a dinner, and we have about 10 to 12 restaurants catering this dinner. Mm-hmm. And it's a networking opportunity for business people, people in prevention, people from all over that want to come and support the children in the Norwalk school system. So there's dinner and then a display of posters and letters they write of how they felt about losing someone to drugs and so on and so forth. And then at 6:30, the program begins at the auditorium. And Bob Duff, state senator, is the MC. And we have the chief of police, the mayor, and superintendent of schools introducing the students. And I also will be giving a snippet or about a half-hour presentation based on Ian's story to the parents who will be hearing my story for the first time, of which the children have had already. Mm. And in some cases, the children know more about drug prevention than the parents.
Sure.
So it's so important for parents to make sure they learn everything that their child is going to be exposed to. And this is an opportunity. This event, no matter how old the child is, from age 6 on up, needs to hear and see and feel and touch, because that's what it's about. It's about a heart, and it's about... Ian's story is about the heart of what I do, and then they receive the tools by the teachers.
The other thing that I think is really cool, and folks, if you're just joining us, Ginger and Larry Katz are in studio with us. Ginger's the founder of the Courage to Speak Foundation, celebrating 21 years in their mission to save lives in honor of their Ginger's late son, Ian, who died of an accidental heroin and prescription drug overdose. 13 years strong, this annual event coming down on Monday, March 13th. At West Rocks Middle School in Norwalk. The incredible thing, Ginger, is the peer-to-peer. It's not only about imparting this information on the most young and impressionable individuals. And as you said, they bring home the message, and oftentimes they learn more about drug prevention than even their parents may know. But also the how it rubs off and gets passed on in their peer groups, especially in the elementary ages. It's like planting dandelions.
Mm-hmm. You know, as you mentioned, the number one deterrent and drug prevention of all of our work is a parent talking to a child about the dangers of drugs.
Yeah.
And the sad statistic is only 1 in 3 parents talks to their children about the dangers of drugs. So we have 2/3 of the kids coming to school that don't have that information in their head about the dangers of what they may be exposed to.
Yeah. And they haven't had that conversation with their parents. So this is an event that brings it together.
Well, I know since the 60s, when I was an adolescent, the 1960s, the whole message was, a peer pressure, avoid peer pressure. So isn't it an incredible thing now, given the fact that we are embroiled in this opioid epidemic, that that the peer pressure and peer influence is flipping to prevention and education?
Right. Absolutely. It's really key. You don't want a child to be like deer in headlights when they're asked to smoke this with me or try this pill.
Yeah. And there's strength in numbers. They know every kid whose friend tells them about their experience with the Courage to Speak program is another one who has an ally, whether they're in their presence or not. When they're tempted by drugs, they know they're not just floating out there
it's
in a wild sea.
It's supported by many children.
Yeah, one of the things actually the curriculum teaches is refusal skills. So they have a mantra that they will be able to say if they get exposed to that situation.
That's fantastic.
And another thing is for children to get 3 to 5 adults in their lives that they can share their secrets with. Because a lot of kids keep trauma in and they keep pain in. And sometimes kids that do that develop risky behaviors, and that could be alcohol and other drugs. And so we want kids to talk about their feelings and have the courage to speak, because it's okay to ask for help. And if you see a friend in trouble, always tell someone. Tell someone. That's really key.
Yeah. Well, we know that plans for each year's Courage to Speak Drug-Free Family Night begin the day after the event ends.
Yes.
But in the last minute or so that we have with you two, what is on the horizon aside from the 2018, the 14th annual
Hot
event?
Off the press, I just got a letter from the National Association of Secondary School Principals. So I'm going to be presenting in Philadelphia at this big event, which hosts about 3,000 principals across the country. And the ironic thing is I did it about 12 years ago, and I also wrote an article for their principal magazine. And that's when I was just presenting Ian's story, which is one thing, which is the heart of what we do. But since then, we developed all these curriculum and these tools for the children and the parents. So now I really want to make sure they know that, and they have tools they can use within their school system as well, or bring me in for a presentation, because that gets us out there and we promote, you know, our work, and more children are saved. We believe that an educated child is a safe one.
Well, all of us at Connoisseur Media are so proud to be asked to be a partner to this program for so many years, Ginger and Larry, and it's great to visit, and we stay in touch throughout the year, as you know.
Website.
Yes.
I also want to mention my website,
yes.
www.couragetospeak.org. Sign up for my newsletter. Come to the event March 13th, no date 14th, and 877-431-3295.
Yes, once again, the 13th Annual Courage to Speak, Empowering Youth to be Drug-Free Family Night. As I said, Connoisseur Media and our Southern Connecticut radio stations proud to be partners. This event happening Monday, March 13th at West Rocks Middle School in Norwalk, Connecticut. Once again, couragetospeak.org is the number. And last word from Ginger, and we'll say goodbye for now.
Bring your children to this event, and you won't regret it.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.